husband is a dairy farmer.
That's the voice of Ron Balson, one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite authors. He was first on this show in April when our mutual friend, the great photographer Chris Jacobs, said, "Hey, you got to read this book, man. You got to read this book." It was called Once We Were Brothers, and I did read it. At the time that I had Ron on, I had also read the book that has just been recently published called Carolina's Twins, and I did not want to say it on the air then because I wanted people to read Once We Were Brothers. Carolina's Twins is, I don't know if it's a better book, Ron, or it's a much more, for me, it was a much more emotional book, though Once We Were Brothers, very emotional, too.
They're both, well, they're emotional because both of them deal with the Polish families and occupied, during the Nazis occupied them. But Carolina's Twins is based on a true story.
I know, a true story that someone, I may have Alzheimer's by this point, but it's only been April, so maybe I can remember that you were out at a book event talking about Once We Were Brothers, and you met a woman who told you a story. Right. And that's what it's based on.
Right. I was in the middle of writing my second book, it was Saving Sophie, and I was doing my Once We Were Brothers book tour, and because of the nature of the story, it's a Holocaust story. You meet a lot of survivors, children of survivors.
Sure.
And a lot of them would come up and they'd want to tell you their stories, even though they might not talk to their own family about it.
No, of course.
It's a psychological dysfunction.
No question. No question.
But this woman called me, and her name was Faye Waldman, and she called me and said, "I read a lot of books about the Holocaust, but when I read your book, I thought I was reading about my own family. You got it just right." Well, and you can't get any better praise than that.
No, you can't.
And I asked if I could meet her and take her out to lunch, and so we did. And she told me her story, and it was it just knocked me out. And I asked her if I could write it. I said, "But you know, I don't write biographies. I write novels with court scenes and romances." And,
sure.
And she said, "That's fine." And so it's based on her life. Of course, there are court scenes in it. They didn't happen, but...
Well, that's because you're a lawyer. You've got to have... You're like Scott Turow. You've got to have court scenes in this thing. You've got to have your court scenes because they're so knowledgeable. It sort of begins with an older woman in Chicago who wants to find somebody. It's both of the books, Once We Were Brothers and Carolina's Twins, are in a sense, I don't know if it's a new genre, but they are kind of sort of like Holocaust mystery stories. Do you buy that definition? Something needs to be solved in each, right?
That's true. In Once We Were Brothers, protagonist accuses a man, a prominent man in Chicago, of being a former Nazi SS officer, and wants to bring him to justice.
Yeah.
And in Carolina's Twins, she comes in and she says she made a promise to her best friend to find two twins, two little babies that were lost during the war, and she wants to keep that promise.
Lost during the war is putting it mildly. Her name was in Lena Woodward, right? Is the Chicago?
Yeah, right.
That's the character.
The book, right?
And who does she go to? Of course, two of my favorite recurring characters, Liam Taggart and Catherine Lockhart. Catherine, a lawyer; Liam, a private eye. And the interplay, I thought, Ron Balson, with those two characters, you know, Liam is they're both a little reluctant to buy into this because Lena Woodward is old and she's trying to resurrect memories from more than 60 years before. So there's a sort of dramatic tension there, isn't there?
There's skepticism, certainly.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take that word. I'll take that word. What's it like to write about those two again? Because you told me before, and I believe this because your work is so powerful, that you live with these characters. These people are, I'm not trying to be weird, but these people are real to you, aren't they?
People say to me, "Isn't it lonely to write? I mean, you sit in a room for 5, 6, 7 hours sometimes, and you don't talk to anybody. You're all by yourself." And I always tell them, maybe I'm crazy, but I'm not lonely. I'm with all my characters.
Yeah.
And they are, you know, they've taken on personalities, and they're real, and I'm placing them in all sorts of confrontations and difficult positions, and so it's not, you know, it's not lonely and not boring for me at all. I didn't start out to do that, you know. I didn't start out to create characters that were continuing characters.
I know.
But one of the things I hope in my writing, I hope that when people finish the book and close the cover, that they say, I'm a little sorry the story's over, because I like spending time with those characters, and I, you know, I'm going to miss those characters.
Well, that's certainly the way I felt at Carolina's Twins, and I don't often, I must tell you, Ron Balson, I've read a lot of books and seen a lot of movies, I don't often get choked up at the end of novels, especially, and I certainly did at yours, and I think our mutual friend now, your biggest fan, Judy Royko, did as well. And I just gave a copy of your book to a woman named Joan Golder, who is, if she's listening, she may have finished by now because she was halfway through it early this morning when she sent me a note. The people who have read Carolina's Twins, and I know the book is just out now, you must be hearing some astonishing things.
It's getting great reviews. I'm so happy with the response it's getting. But there have been, you know, there are so many blogs that are dedicated to reviewing books.
Sure.
And there have to be 25, 30 of them that are all gushing over the book. I'm delighted by it and humbled by it, but it's great reviews.
You are. That's a great combination with you. But you came to this, you know, strange profession of fiction writing relatively late in your career. You have had a long and successful career as a lawyer. And remind people again, not we don't have to do the whole story about how Once We Were Brothers got discovered, because it may be the great modern-day publishing story. I'm going to write about you and tell that story. But you went to Poland on a case.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were wandering around Poland where the Holocaust is really manifest. I mean, there are plaques and signs and signals
everywhere you look.
Everything, yeah. It's there. It's very present.
That's true. It's right in your face, because you have to remember that Poland ceased to be.
Yes.
The Nazis, when they invaded Poland, they took half of it and absorbed it into Germany. They annexed half of Poland, and then the other half they called the general government. It wasn't even Poland anymore. There was no Poland. There was no government. There were no schools. There were no town governments. There was nothing left to Poland. And so now if you go there, there are scars everywhere. You can't
Yeah.
You can't help but know that this was a country that was so trampled during the war.
When you did the research for Once We Were Brothers, I'm going to keep you here till at least a quarter two. So you and your lovely wife, lovely long supporting wife Monica, to whom you dedicate to all your books.
She is my first editor. She reads the pages when they come off the printer.
I know, and her opinion means everything to you, right?
She's critical.
Yeah, not falsely critical, but constructively. It's constructive,
we hope so. Yeah.
Constructive criticism. When you decided, even with the input from this woman you had met, to tackle writing about women, was that a leap for you? Because in Once We Were Brothers, the main characters are, with the exception of the lawyer, men, guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was that a difficult leap for you, creatively or emotionally, or because you're writing about, you know, babies and having babies and
I know
losing babies and
I know I don't know that I don't think it was a difficult leap. I think that if you're a fiction writer, you know, and I always keep that quote from Joan Didion in my mind.
Yeah, that's our mutual favorite writer. I remember that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And she said, imagining what someone would say or do comes to me as naturally as breathing.
Wow.
And I don't know. When you get into it, when you're totally absorbed in writing the characters and you think you know the character very well, I don't know that it's a leap, you know?
Boy, that's well put. I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right about that. So tell me what some of the people who have read this book have said to you. And I'm not just talking about critics, because you go out and speak all the time.
I speak a lot, yeah. Many times they focus on the relationships of the parties. And I think that, you know, I write historical fiction, and so therefore there's a story to tell with a lot of facts and details and history. But the difference between writing a novel and just writing a history book is that there are relationships. So, I mean, in Once We Were Brothers, there's a relationship between Ben and Catherine. They have a bond. They form a bond.
No question.
And between Ben and his wife, Hannah, and even between Ben and Otto, the bad guy, they have a relationship. It's not a good relationship, but it's a relationship.
Right.
And in Carolina's Twins, that the friendship is so strong, the bond that she forms that Lena forms with Carolina, that's an overriding relationship. And then she forms other relationships with the man Yossi.
I don't want to give too much away about it either.
No, but the heart of writing a novel, I think, is historical fiction, is to make sure that the relationships exist.
You are my hero, Ron Balsam. We got to take a commercial break. I'll keep you here for a little while longer to talk about this book. You can go. You now have a website, don't you?
I do.
You do. He does. It's Ronald, because that's the formal title. I know what Monica calls you. I call you Ron.
Ron.
And, yeah, I know Ron, but it's Ronald Balsam, RonaldBalson.com. And you need to buy certainly these two books, and perhaps even the one between, because he cannot write two Holocaust books back to back. I think that would be
pretty dark.
You'd be in a you and I'd both be in a mental institution, because I'd be reading them. Welcome back. I'm with my favorite author currently. It may change if you don't keep writing books.
You better,
but you can't write a Holocaust book now, because
I'm writing one, a murder mystery in Northern Ireland.
Oh, you told me about that. How's that coming?
It's good.
Brent, remind me again, you spent your career as a prominent, successful attorney here, and the career switch happened relatively late in life, but you'd always written, hadn't you? I mean, lawyers write.
Lawyers write.
It may be sort of dry kind of writing.
Well, that's it. I mean, lawyers, I spent the last 40 years writing, but it's legal briefs, you know, and so it's very restricting and limiting. You're posed with an issue. I mean, you have to research it, support it, argue it, and you know, convince the judge that you're right. So I think that, like a lot of lawyers, because people say, you know, lawyers always want to write. You know, they want to write some novel. And I
think that's because of Scott Turow. They want to write a novel.
Maybe.
They
want to be as successful as Scott Turow.
From your lips.
But I think that when you write a novel, I mean, that's the ultimate creative art. You know, characters are born of your imagination. You can set them wherever you want. You can set them here. You can set them in Poland. You can set them anywhere, and you can set them at any time period.
Yeah.
And whether it's 70 years ago during the war, or maybe if you're a science fiction writer, 2,000 years ahead.
Sure.
So that's the ultimate creativity, and I think that that's just, you know, it's always been something I wanted to do.
But you must think at one point, because not only do I greatly admire and adore these books, the two that I've read of yours, but so many others do, and they have sold a lot of copies, and I think that's a good indication that people like them. And the word of mouth about certainly your first one, Once We Were Brothers, was an astonishment. Do you sometimes say to yourself, do you try to figure out, you must be, or will you admit to me, or think, in answer to this question, do you think you're a natural? Is there such thing as a natural fiction writer? You got to have that in you. I mean, I know a lot of lawyers who couldn't write a goodbye letter or ask for a gift from Santa Claus.
I'll take that compliment. I'm not going to say that you I'm are. A natural anything, but I'll sure take that compliment.
Now, you were so wonderfully self-effacing, and that's why I think you were probably a terribly powerful speaker, because you've also argued cases. I mean, it seems as if your career in law is the perfect kind of foundation for what you're now doing. You're still a lawyer. You're still a working lawyer.
Still, yeah.
But in a weird way, in a non-conscious, in a non-pragmatic way, it set the foundation for what you're doing now.
I think so. I mean, you know, law is telling stories, isn't it? I mean, when you're pressing your position, whether it be in front of a jury or a judge, it has to be organized. It has to be compelling and persuasive, and it is a story. I mean, your client's position is a story of sorts.
Yeah. And also, being in and presenting cases in any kind of courtroom is a kind of performance thing, too, is it not?
Unquestionably.
The law is theater. I mean, I've always thought a courtroom is like a theater.
Absolutely right.
You agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about Monica, who comes to the station with you, who is a beautiful woman, who you've dedicated your books to.
Yeah, I drag her everywhere.
I don't know who would blame you. But also that kind of support, I mean, the kind of support that one gets from a spouse in an endeavor such as writing, because as you said, you necessarily have to lock yourself up for 6 or 7 hours every day with these other people. You have another life apart. It must be sometimes sort of hard to come out and say, oh, hi, honey, I just killed so-and-so in the war.
Well, if I did, I'm taking that piece of paper right off the printer and giving it to her. And she'll say, why did you kill him? You know,
is it that immediate? I mean, as your first reader, does she read as you're writing?
Yes. I mean,
I'm fascinated by this, though.
I'll get, you know, maybe a couple of chapters at a time, and we'll come off the printer, and then I'll give them to her. I want to make sure I'm going in the right direction, that things make sense. And she'll tell me if they don't. She'll say, well, I don't think he would ever do that, you know. And it make me think twice about things. She's incredibly supportive. So when you hit the nail on the head. She's very supportive, and is really one of those wind beneath my wings kind of things.
Did you ever read Sophie's Choice? William Styron's Sophie's Choice.
Yeah.
Has this book been compared to that by anybody? Just in that, I'm not trying to give away too much. It's not Sophie's Choice Jr. or anything.
No, it's not. And no one's compared it but you. But it hadn't been out very long, so.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. But it's,
yeah, but that I would but there be, were, I'd be honored with that kind of comparison.
Yeah, I mean, there are emotional things. You're dealing with territory that is about as at the same time the great horror story of the 20th century, but also contains minor horrors throughout that most of us don't know anything about. The sort of personal stories that we're alive in once we were brothers, for sure, and are totally alive in Carolina's twins,
but
as
also
well.
Triumphs.
Yep.
And I think that that's important too. Yes. Horrors and unbelievable situations.
Inhumanity.
Oh, yes, but triumphs. And one of the things that I try to address is I like my books at least to provoke some things to think about after the books are done or to argue about. One of the things that I try to address is how do these people keep their faith? How did they possibly believe that there was such a thing as God when all of these catastrophes and calamities were all around them?
Yeah. Or...
But they did. Yeah. Many of them did.
You know, the thing, you know, Stud Circle didn't just write a book called The Good War, and nothing really good about it, but also a book called, and this is the thing that I get out of both of your books, too. He wrote a book, the title of which was Hope Dies Last. And I think that is true in every one of your characters, no matter what they are confronting, they are still hopeful about life, or hopeful about the truth, or hopeful about mankind. That may be the big triumph in all of your writing.
I think that's a real good observation, because certainly Lena is hopeful the entire time, and looks to survive no matter what. And so I think that's right. And Faye, the woman on who inspired this book and on whose life it's based, she was that kind of a woman, a magnificent woman. And there's a picture of her that's hanging in the Holocaust Museum.
In the Illinois
Holocaust Museum.
Skokie.
Picture of her like with a fist. It was taken in 1978. Wow. When she was leading a protest against the neo-Nazis march in Skokie.
Nuts.
She was that kind of a woman, a very strong woman. She would have had to been to endure everything.
Is she still with us?
No, she's not.
She died.
She died before the book came out, before the book was finished.
Well, in the great theme of hope dies last, maybe wherever she is, she can read the book or listen to us talking about the book. I mean, if you really want to get kind of philosophical about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you have, and I know this is, Leap, I'm going to keep you guys for about 5 more minutes. Is there another Holocaust? I know you're writing now about Northern Ireland, and that's got to be something too. But in this Holocaust book, non-Holocaust book, Holocaust book, non-Holocaust book, do you have another Holocaust book in you? Another? I'm calling these Holocaust mysteries.
Yeah. There's a book, a person that I know, and I've known her for many years, and her mother was quite prominent at the Holocaust Museum and had a very, very interesting life and her circumstances. I'm toying with that idea.
Yeah.
I don't know that I will go with it. I don't know if there's enough there that I think would make a full novel. And so I'm toying with that idea.
Well, but now as you're out and about, you just did an event earlier tonight, and I'm really grateful, in front of 200 people. And does it, this may be a little philosophical too, is it strange to you that we are living in an age where very, very, very shortly, there's not going to be anybody around?
You know, we talk about that all the time.
Do you?
Another 5-6 years, there won't be any more survivors. There won't be any more Nazis.
Yeah.
That whole thing will be gone, and no one will be here.
There
won't be anybody to chase, and no one will be here to tell us, to interview, to tell us exactly what happened then. So as much as we know now is as much as we're going to know.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, my friend J.B. Pritzker was very helpful in getting that Holocaust Museum built, and I took little Fiona up there, who is 1/4 Jewish, and it was a remarkable experience. I mean, I think it's an amazing place. Not a happy place, but it's a hopeful place.
It's a hopeful place. Well, it goes from black to white, right?
Yeah. That's very well put. Ron Paulson, the author most recently of Carolina's Twins. He has a website now. This is great. He's a real, legitimate, big-time modern author. Ronald Paulson, RONALDBALSON.com. Look for a story about him in your Chicago Tribune within the next couple of weeks, because I'm such an admirer that I want to write about him, and I can quote his biggest fan, Judy Rako, who was married to a pretty good writer.
Yeah, pretty good, I would say.
Ron, do you know what the first printing was of this book? How many copies?
I have no idea.
Well, I'm thinking hundreds of thousands would be about in the ballpark. Ron, it's really an ongoing treat to know you, and an ongoing treat to,
it's great to be here.
Read you, and Monica is a doll, and I'm sure the rest of your family's great too.
Thanks.
All right, take care. We'll take a break, and then I'll play a couple more songs.